I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. It's time for our Wisdom Watch conversation. Willie Brown was born at a time and in a place where the horizons of most black men were limited by law and custom. But Brown rose to the height of Golden State politics, first as the Speaker of the California State Assembly and later as Mayor of San Francisco. Although he left the mayor's office in 2004, he has never left the limelight. Brown is still offering advice and great stories from his decades in office. He's now written a book about his life and career. It's called Basic Brown, My Life and Our Times. And he's here with us in our studios in Washington. Welcome. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Michelle.
Why are you telling a fib in the title? There's nothing basic about you.
It was not my choice of a title, as a matter of fact. Someone at Simon & Schuster, in their brilliance, came up with the idea, Basic Brown. I loved it. I could have vetoed it, but it was better than I think I could have thought up.
Well, actually, I was thinking about this, and I'm thinking maybe that's part of your appeal, is that you keep it very real. What you see is what you get.
There's no question about it. I have not been able to conceal. There's so much glee for me in what I do that I don't have time to disguise it.
You've lived in many ways a classic American success story. I confess, I did not know that you were born in Texas. I assumed you were a native San Franciscan. Tell us, how did you come to be in San Francisco?
I had an uncle who lived in San Francisco, and my mother finally relented and agreed to let me come to California and live with him. Only after it became apparent that I could not survive the schools, i.e., in this case, Prairie View A&M College in Hempstead, Texas, that I would not make it. And she relented and allowed me to go with her brother, whom she didn't think a whole lot of on the religious side. My mother was very religious. My uncle had no relationship to the church whatsoever, and my mother didn't like that. So she made a commitment with me. The first day you get there, you join church, and I did.
But tell me, what was it about Texas, where you grew up? You were born in a little town called Mineola, that made her feel, you know, you had to get out of there. It's not an easy thing for a mother to send her child so far away.
Well, in this case, my mother was always of the opinion that education was the most important thing. She graduated from, I think, maybe the 10th grade at the most, and in the process thought very much of making sure that her family and her children, all five, would go off to college and do wonderful things. And therefore, you couldn't do that in Mineola. You couldn't do it any place near Mineola. And as a result of that, she said, you go off, and I went to Hempstead, Texas. But it didn't work out. In Hempstead, the rules were such that there could not be an occasion for Willie Brown to survive. My mother recognized that and sent me away.
And you got yourself into college and eventually went to law school. If you just briefly tell the story about how you got involved in politics. I mean, you were in law school, and I think you were living at a church, was it, as a handyman?
Yes.
Tell that story.
Well, in college at San Francisco State, I got allowed into that college by virtue of the fact that I could not get into Stanford. A professor named Duncan Gillies, who taught at San Francisco State, but who did counseling down at Stanford, in the examination process said, you will never qualify for Stanford, but I can get you in the state. So, Michelle, I may be the first affirmative action non-athlete that entered San Francisco State College. I got there, and he said, but you've got to perform. If you flunk out, you're out. Well, lo and behold, I made it, graduated from San Francisco State, and went on to Hastings College of Law, and I became a lawyer. In that little institution, however, I met a guy named John Burden. John Burden was Phil Burden's younger brother. Phil Burden was a legendary political figure in California, a congressman. On the occasion of my meeting him, we were in the ROTC together. He invited me to hang out with him for purposes of going to a young Democratic meeting. I did. I was also a member of the Alpha Phi Alpha Pledge Club, the Sphinx, and I went on to become a member of that organization. I was also involved in the NAACP and in Jones Methodist Church. A combination of all those four things led to my being exposed to the world of public policymaking potentially. And because I had such great skills and great communication skills, it was easy for people to sign on with me.
Well, one of the points you make in the book is that it's important to have a passion for what you're doing and to have great ideas, but you got to have skills. You got to know how to dress. You got to know how to raise money. You got to learn who not to tee off. Was there an aha moment when you realized this?
Well, even to this day, I'm not sure that I fully appreciate how damaging it can be to offend some people, because my utterances sometimes do that to people. I don't mean any harm, but if it evokes mirth, I sometimes do it. I must tell you, though, that it has in fact become kind of my stock in trade, and it has become in part the basis for much of who I am and what I am about.
As well as your sartorial splendor, like there was the time you showed up at the assembly in your Nehru jacket.
That was a long time ago. I had on beads and I had on the Nehru jacket, and I had on dashiki on another occasion. But those were the days of the Haight-Ashbury. Those were the days of Flower Children, and I represented the Flower Children District in San Francisco. So it was almost natural for me to display to that group of 79 people that knew nothing about Flower Children, and in many cases, their teenage kids were hanging out in the Haight. I wanted to demonstrate what a difference lifestyle could make just by wearing apparel alone, and that's what I did.
Well, what were you demonstrating when you voted against the Speaker of the House on your first vote?
I was demonstrating very clearly that you can't oppose me and expect me not to forget it. You would think that when you say, I want someone else to be the guy, and I beat you, I'm not going to support you. And that's what that was about.
And he paid you back by?
He paid me back by assigning me to a seat next to what basically was a guy who used racist expressions for whatever he decided to do.
Oh, come on now. You don't pull your punches in the book. You say he sat you next to one of the biggest racists in the assembly.
I changed him, though. One of the beauties of doing what was done was Ike Britschke was his name, and I identify him in the book. And he used phrases that were just absolutely horrible. But after a bit, he realized that, one, I spoke English. Number two, that I could, in fact, read the bills. And number three, that I could debate. And on many occasions, because of his own limited skills and ability, I would come to his rescue. And overnight, he went from being a real bad guy to a guy that it would at least accept a brother.
Which is interesting. You make a point in your book that you're not afraid to be friends with anybody. You don't care. You know, you'll be friends with Arnold Schwarzenegger. You don't hesitate to try to, you know, befriend people across the sort of the political spectrum. How did you come to that point of view?
For a long time, it was clear in my mind that in the world of politics and in a democracy, you have to build a consensus for your projects and your proposals. And I concluded that I could not rely upon just Democrats to be supportive of my position. That proved to be incredibly true for the speakership fight in 1980 when I won the speakership fight. And so my theory clearly demonstrated, in my opinion, to deal with the entire constituency, not just your limited soulmates, your limited ideologues and those who hang on with you or your fellow party members. That was always my agenda, and it still is.
If you're just joining us, I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News, and we're talking with former San Francisco Mayor Willie Brown about his new memoir, Basic Brown. But that is a point of view that is not universally embraced. In fact, there was a policy here in the Congress for the last couple of years under former Republican Speaker Dennis Hastert that bills had to have a majority of the majority before they could move forward. I guess there's been a sense in national politics of late that it's really more important to play to the base than it is to seek these coalitions, and that's the way politics is to be practiced, to sort of maintain that kind of, sort of ideological purity has become sort of more of a priority. I'm just wondering how it is in a state like California, as diverse as it is, as big as it is, if it were a nation unto itself, it would be one of the world's largest, how you were able to practice politics in that way. And I also have to point out that you never had a district in which African-Americans, for those who don't know, you're African-American, that ever had more than 15% African-Americans.
No. It was never that high.
Oh, I stand correct.
I wish it had been that high. I have never been the beneficiary of a heavy-duty black constituency. I don't think I would have changed my conduct or my votes, even if I had been so gifted or so benefited. It is just one of the things that you have to do in this business, and that is do not require people to stick their hands in the fire if they are not interested in so doing, if it's not in their interest and only in yours.
There are a lot of hilarious stories in the book about how you kind of pulled up some various kind of political gambits. But I do want to make one point. California is considered, I think, a very progressive state. And I think a lot of people who have never been there maybe think of it as kind of like loosey-goosey because of maybe the whole Hollywood scene and so forth. But I think it's fair to point out that that when you first started in the California Assembly, the threat of assassination, there were political figures who were killed in your state on the national and the local level. I wondered if you felt ever afraid in that time.
No, not really. I got turned off, of course, dramatically when my friend George Moscone was assassinated along with Supervisor Harvey Milk, and that's covered in the book. But I didn't fear for my own life. As a matter of fact, I cite an incident of where, after Moscone was killed, on the same day, some friends who lived in San Francisco came down to City Hall, just, I thought, to visit, and they invited me to go to lunch with them, and we headed to lunch, and on the occasions of walking the streets to go into the restaurant, some guy opens a van, and with that, every person except me pulled out a gun, and the poor guy in the van almost died. And I did not realize that they were looking out for me, thinking that maybe Moscone's assassination was not the only one someone was after. Several years later, under Freedom of Information, and this information was gathered from Dan White's archives, it became clear that he had a list of people he intended to assassinate. And I was on that list on that very day in which I was in the mayor's office shortly before he was assassinated. And then when serving as mayor of San Francisco, on more than one occasion, downstairs where you clear security, they enter, they stopped at least two different people armed and with the intention of harming me, the mayor.
I just want to clarify for those who don't remember that Dan White is the person who killed George Moscone. I have to say, one of the other things about this book, it's striking, you put all your business in the street. You've been married to the same woman for more than 50 years, but you've never hidden the fact, and you don't in this book, the fact that you have had numerous outside relationships. How on earth did you get away with that?
Well, get away with it, I'm not sure is a proper description. I think that Blanche, probably the only woman in the world that would have ever married me, certainly based on my conduct,
sure she's the only woman who would have married you. Maybe the only one who would have put up with you, but
yes,
which is different.
She came to the conclusion a long time ago that I was just me, and therefore I should go do whatever I wish in my world of politics and in my world of relationships, but leave her alone and make sure that in the end, she would always be there. She had her own relationships once I had moved out of her life, so to speak. But she made it clear to whomever she was with that that guy's my husband and that is going to change. And I made it very clear with whatever person I was with, that woman is my wife and that is going to change. And believe me, the children absolutely love the fact that we clearly love each other, respect each other, but know that our lives have taken different turns and that there isn't any reason or for us to be negative with reference to those terms.
But what about your relationship with your constituents? And I know that San Francisco has a reputation for being a very sort of liberal city, very progressive city. Why don't you talk about that?
You were stunned for a moment. I loved it. Well, let me tell you, Michelle, I think in the world of politics, and I talk about this in the book, all of these confessions made by these politicians when they get caught, and all this, I'm sorry, all of this mea culpa, this business of asking forgiveness, I'm going into rehab, people really come away with the idea that that is as phony as all get out, particularly if your conduct has absolutely nothing to do with how you do your duties as mayor, your duties as speaker, your duties as president, your duties as whatever.
I cannot let you go without talking about the fact that you're famous not just for your political sense, but your fashion sense. What do you think your style says about you?
Well, I think it eliminates the need for anybody to look at me strange and say there's something wrong with him. Because you see, again, Michelle, it comes back from my Texas upbringings, from my Mineola upbringings. I had clothing that I could only wear to church, and I didn't touch them unless I was going to church or unless it was Sunday. And that was a standard in the family. And the same goes for all the other African-American families in that community. It was clear that we needed at all times to be presentable. And that has stayed with me to the present day. You develop your own style in the process as you move along and as you become more able to afford. But invariably, it is still your style.
The fashion challenge will be pleased to know that you give detailed fashion advice, particularly to aspiring political leaders, both men and women, in the book. But I must ask, who are you wearing today?
I'm wearing Brioni today.
Oh, all Brioni?
All
Brioni. Brioni shirt, Brioni tie.
No, the shirt is Borelli, and the tie is Keaton.
And what do you think of my outfit?
I think your outfit is fabulous. I checked the shoes as you were walking back in. The boots are just perfect. You are dressed for a wonderful, warm winter day.
I'm so glad that I meet with your approval. Willie Brown is the former leader of the California State Assembly, the former mayor of San Francisco. His new book is Basic Brown, My Life and Our Times. He was kind enough to join me here in Washington. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.